closest that you've gotten to this thing is that when we talked about that you were at Golgotha on the place of the skull, and I asked you to turn around and look at Christ. And I think that because of the commonplace or the discussions of it, we've made the cross commonplace. And so what I want to describe to you here is the suffering and the torture that took place in the body of Christ, who died so you can't any longer objectify. Is that clear? Physical passion of Christ begins in Gethsemane. Of the many aspects of this initial suffering, only one will be discussed here, and that's the bloody sweat. It's interesting that the physician of the group, St. Luke, is the only one who mentions this. He said, in being in agony, he prayed the longer, and his sweat became as drops of blood trickling down upon the ground. There's a rare phenomenon called hematidrosis, or bloody sweat, and it's well documented. Under great emotional stress, tiny capillaries in the sweat glands break, and thus mixing blood with sweat. This process alone would have produced marked weakness and possible shock. Then after the arrest in the middle of the night, Jesus was brought before the Sanhedrin and Caiaphas the high priest. The first physical trauma here was inflicted. A soldier struck Jesus across the face for remaining silent when questioned by Caiaphas. The palace guards then blindfolded him and mockingly taunted him to identify them as they passed by, and each spat at him and struck him in the face. Now in the early morning, Jesus, battered and bruised, dehydrated and exhausted from a sleepless night, is taken from Jerusalem to the praetorium of the fortress Antonia, the seat of government of the procurator of Judea, Pontius Pilate. Pilate attempted to pass responsibility to Herod, and Jesus apparently suffered no physical mistreatment at the hands of Herod, who was returned to Pilate. It was then, in response to the cries of the mob, that Pilate ordered Barabbas released and condemned Jesus to scourging and crucifixion. Most scholars believe that Pilate originally just ordered the scourging and that was going to be enough. But the mob threatened this pretender who claimed to be the king of the Jews. Now, preparations for the scourging are carried out. Jesus was stripped of his clothing. His hands were tied to a post above his head, and he was stripped naked. The Jews had an ancient law forbidding more than 40 lashes. The Pharisees, always making sure that the law was strictly kept, insisted that only 39 lashes be given. The Roman legionnaire, and this was just to take them one step before death, but the Roman legionnaire now steps forward. with the flagrum in his hand. This is a short whip consisting of several heavy leather thongs and two small balls of lead attached near the end of each strip of leather. The heavy whip is brought down with full force again and again across Jesus' shoulders, back, buttocks, and legs. At first, the heavy thongs cut through the skin only. Then, as the blows continue, they cut deeper and deeper into the subcutaneous tissues, producing first an oozing of blood from the capillaries and veins of the skin, and finally spurting arterial bleeding from the vessels and the underlying muscles. The small balls of lead at first produce large, deep bruises, which are broken open on subsequent blows. And finally, the skin of the back is hanging in long ribbons. The entire area is an unrecognizable mass of torn, bleeding tissue. When it is determined by the centurion in charge that the prisoner is near death, the beating is finally stopped. The half-fainting Jesus is then untied and allowed to slump to the stone pavement, now wet with his own blood. The Roman soldiers see a great joke in this provincial Jew claiming to be a king. They throw a purple robe, across his shoulders and place a stick in his hand for a scepter. They still need a crown to make their travesty complete. A small bundle of flexible acacia branches covered with long thorns, commonly used for firewood, are plaited into the shape of a crown, and this is pressed into his scalp. And again, there is copious bleeding, the scalp being one of the most vascular areas of the body. After mocking him and striking him across the face, the soldiers take the stick from his hand and strike him across the head, driving the thorns deeper into the scalp. And finally, they tire of their sadistic sport, and the robe was torn back from his back. This had already become adherent to the clots of blood in the serum in the wounds, and its removal, just as in the careless removal of a surgical bandage, causes excruciating pain, almost as though he were again being whipped, and the wounds again begin to bleed. In deference to the Jewish custom, the Romans returned his garments. The heavy patibulum of the cross is tied across his shoulders, and the procession of the condemned Christ, two thieves, and the execution detail of the Roman soldiers headed by the centurion begins its slow journey along the Via Dolorosa. In spite of his efforts to walk erect, the weight of the heavy wooden beam, together with a shock produced by copious blood loss, is too much. He stumbles and falls. The rough wood of the beam gouges into the lacerated skin and muscles of his shoulders. He tries to rise, but human muscles have been pushed beyond their endurance. The centurion, anxious to get on with the crucifixion, selects a stalwart North African onlooker, Simon of Cyrene, to carry the cross. Jesus follows, still bleeding and sweating the cold, clammy sweat of shock. The journey is finally completed. The prisoner is again stripped of his clothes, except for a loincloth, which is allowed by the Jews. And the crucifixion begins. Jesus is offered wine mixed with myrrh, a mild analgesic mixture. He refuses the drink, and Simon is ordered to place the patibulum on the ground, and Jesus is quickly thrown backward with his shoulders against the wood. The legionnaire feels for the depression at the front of the wrists, and then he drives a heavy, square, wrought iron nail through the wrist and deep into the wood. Quickly he moves to the other side and repeats the action, being careful not to pull the arm too tightly, but to allow some flexion and movement. The patibulum is then lifted in the place at the top of the stipes, and the titulus reading Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, is nailed in place. The left foot is pressed down backward against the right foot. With both feet extended, toes down, a nail is driven through the arch of each, leaving the knees slightly, moderately flexed. The victim is now crucified. As he slowly sags down with more weight on the nails and the wrists, excruciating fiery pain shoots along the fingers and the arms to explode in the brain. The nails and the wrists are putting pressure on the median nerves, Then as he pushes himself upward to avoid this stretching torment, he places his full weight on the nail through his feet. Again, there is a searing agony of the nail tearing through the nerves between the metatarsal bones of the feet. At this point, another phenomenon occurs. As the arms fatigue, great waves of cramps sweep over the muscles, knotting them in deep, relentless, throbbing pain. With these cramps comes the inability to push himself upward. Hanging by his arms, the pectoral muscles are paralyzed, and the intercostal muscles are unable to act. Air can be drawn into the lungs, but cannot be expelled. Jesus fights to raise himself in order to get even one short breath. And finally, carbon dioxide builds up in the lungs and in the bloodstream, and the cramps partially subside for a moment. Spasmodically, he is able to push himself upward to exhale and bring in the life-giving oxygen. It was undoubtedly during these periods that he uttered the seven short sentences which are recorded. The first, looking down at the Roman soldiers throwing dice for his garment, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." The second, to the penitent thief, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." The third, looking down at the terrified, grief-stricken adolescent John, the beloved apostle, he said, "Behold thy mother." And looking to Mary, his mother, "Woman, behold thy son." The fourth cries from the beginning of the 22nd Psalm, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Hours of this limitless pain, the cycles of twisting, joint rending cramps, intermittent partial asphyxiation, searing pain as tissue is torn from his lacerated back as he moves up and down against the rough timber. Then another agony begins. A crushing pain deep in the chest as the pericardium slowly fills with serum and begins to compress the heart. And let us remember again the 22nd Psalm, the 14th verse. "I am poured out like water, all my bones are out of joint, my heart is like wax, it is melted in the midst of my bowels." It is now almost over. The loss of tissue fluids has reached a critical level. The compressed heart is struggling to pump heavy, thick, sluggish blood into the tissues. The tortured lungs are making a frantic effort to grasp in small gulps of air. The markedly hydrated tissues send their flood of stimuli to the brain. And Jesus gasps his fifth cry, "I thirst." And let us remember another verse from the 22nd Psalm. "My strength is dried up like potsherd, and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws. Thou hast brought me into the dust of death." A sponge soaked in Pascha, the chief sour wine, which is the staple of drink of the Roman legionaries, is lifted to his lips. He apparently doesn't take any of the liquid. The body of Jesus is now in extremis, and he can feel the chill of death creeping through his tissues. And this realization brings out his sixth words, possibly a little more than a tortured whisper: "It is finished." His mission of atonement for the sin of the world has been completed. Finally, he can now allow his body to die. With one last surge of strength, he once again presses his torn feet against the nail, straightens his legs, takes a deeper breath, and utters his seventh and last cry: "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit." In order that the Sabbath be not profaned, the Jews ask that condemned men be dispatched and removed from the crosses. The common method of ending a crucifixion was by breaking the bones of the legs. This prevented the victim from pushing himself upward, and the tension could not be relieved from the muscles of the chest, and rapid suffocation occurred. The legs of the two thieves were broken, but when they came to Jesus, they saw that the legionnaire had taken the lance and driven it through the fifth interspace between the ribs. The 34th Gospel of the 19th chapter of John, and immediately they came out blood and water. And thus there was an escape of watery fluid from the sac where surrounding the heart, and blood from the interior. We have rather conclusive post-mortem evidence that our Lord died not the usual crucifixion death by suffocation, but he died with a broken heart. thus seeing a glimpse of the epitome of evil which man can exhibit toward man and toward God. This is not a pretty sight, and is apt to leave us depressed. How grateful we can be that we have a sequel, a glimpse of the infinite mercy of God toward man, the miracle of atonement, the resurrection of the seed of first fruits. I want you to see and understand that by your refusal to accept the mercy, you are crucifying the Son of God afresh. So he's experiencing that all over again. Can you hear that? You've counted the blood of the Son of God as an unholy thing. And you've now stood and watched take place. And in fact, as that lance was penetrated the heart of Christ, a drop of that blood has hit you. You're forgiven. Whether you know it or not, forgiven. The next time you read, or any of you read, following, I want you to remember what we just read. I am crucified with Christ. That means it was you on that cross with him. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I that liveth. But Christ liveth in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not frustrate the grace of God. If righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. That little boy waiting with a glove in his hand is now merged with the evil one that wanted to kill him, is now both dead on the cross. Can you hear that? The manufactured character is no longer living. He now takes no thought for his own life. Can you hear that?